the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is Jess Root from CardsWire.com. The USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals, and my co-host on this edition of the show, as is typically the case, almost always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. And in this edition of the show, number 242, we have a Cardinals team that has won three straight games. The latest win coming up by means of a 27-21 road victory over the New York Giants. And in this edition of the show, we're going to talk about a number of things. So welcome to the show, and thank you for listening as always. Today, there's so much to talk about, recording on a Tuesday night, so you'll hear it on Wednesday. And so what we are going to be doing in this edition basically is this. Chase Edmonds. Chase Edmonds, who had a huge game. We're going to talk about the defense and the win. We're going to talk about a number of things. We're talking about David Johnson and the lack of playing time, and then the fantasy football mess that they came and the rant that Matthew Berry had. We'll talk about the play of Kyler Murray and the defense of the return of Pat Peterson. I've got some stats that you want to talk about, that we want to talk about as well. So the significance of the record so far. We're going to talk about the offense and all of that, and also as well, we will look ahead to their next game against the New Orleans Saints. This is a packed episode of all sorts of information, and I'm going to bring Seth on here in just a moment to get us started. So give us just a moment as we get started. Thank you for listening. As always, this is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. So here we go, Seth, and welcome to the show as always. Let's jump right in with our talk about Chase Edmonds and his performance. He had 27 carries, 126 yards, 3 touchdowns, and those 3 touchdowns were all big plays. 20 yards, 20 yards, 22 yards, giving him now 4 rushing touchdowns on the season, all 4 of which have gone for 20 yards at least. 20, 20, 22, and the other, which was the 37-yarder. My goodness. What can you say about the play of Chase Edmonds first and foremost before anything else?
You know, the biggest thing, and it was something you and I have talked about quite a bit, is that he's just more at this juncture of a dynamic running back. He's probably not as good of an all-around player as David Johnson, but from a pure running back standpoint, he is a guy that runs with more authority. He runs with more decisiveness, and he is decidedly quicker in the open field. And I think that all came to life in the game. I mean, you saw the fact that he was able to put plays that David Johnson probably gains 4 or 5 yards, he was able to score on. Plays that David Johnson probably gains 1 or 2 yards, he was able to go for big runs. And that's the That's what they need at the running back position, because they have such a dynamic rushing attack. And now if you're getting kind of that three-pronged approach with the kind of bruising battering ram style that has been David Johnson the past two seasons, and then you're getting these kind of change of pace dynamic runs from Chase Edmonds and Kyler Murray, they're really difficult with the Cliff Kingsbury schemes and the fact that the offensive line is just playing so well in these blocking schemes. You're seeing just a different team at this juncture.
What impressed me the most, first of all, we had never seen Chase do anything other than spot duty. So if we want to take the comparison, back in 2013, Andre Ellington showed all sorts of flashes. and everyone was crying for him to get the ball more. And finally, when they did, he exploded. And this is kind of what I see from Chase Edmonds. Am I ready to crown him starting running back? I don't think so. Not yet. We were just barely able to see him once handle a full load in a game and hold up. We need to see what we come forward. But obviously, now, when we look at the overall performance, he has 126 yards total. 62 of them come on three plays. And then he had some other ones. But there are a lot of negative plays. And part of that was in the second half when the Cardinals were actively not passing the ball in the rain. But that production that he had, the high variance production, if we want to go back to David Johnson's 2016 season, the boom or bust mentality that Chase had it kind of, if you look at the second half especially, was David Johnson in 2016. He had a bunch of negative plays and he had a bunch of home run type plays. We saw that from Andre Ellington as well. And then David Johnson, we've seen him develop into fewer negatives, but also fewer big plays for whatever reason over the last couple of years. And so Chase is a great compliment to have. I still think that if we saw David Johnson getting that 20 to 25 carries every game, I think we would see similar production. It would just look different. Because on the games that David Johnson has had good usage, you know, he had the 18 carries in week one. He had the 19 carries, was it against Cincinnati? And in those games, he was quite productive in the running game. It was very David Johnson-esque. Chase Edmonds, though, he's something new and something flashy. And he gives a slightly different running style during the near the line of scrimmage because he hits his first burst quickly. He does less reading than, say, a David Johnson or a Le'Veon Bell because if you tell him, and this is kind of how DJ Humphreys described him, is you tell him to run this direction, he does, and he hits it hard. He's a much more disciplined runner, less likely to take liberties with the play. But as a result, it's a little bit more predictable, and he also finds those holes. And then the fact of the matter is the offensive line, this is so weird to say, is playing well. And number one reason for that, they've been all playing together. Four of the five players have played every single snap. And Justin Murray has played every single snap of the five games he started. So we have an incredibly cohesive unit. Chase Edmonds is productive. Now, what does that mean for what do you think that means for how his usage should be in the weeks to come? Obviously, with the 27 carries, his yards per carry went down to a very, you know, very good 4.9, but it wasn't. Like, right now, he's number four in the league. He feels like his production over the course of this year has been very Matt Breida-like. If you look at the San Francisco 49ers last year, and he wasn't the workhorse to start the season, but he was super productive, and people wanted, the 49ers fans really wanted him to get the ball. That's what's happening now. Do we really want to see 15 carries of Chase Edmonds every game? Or are we going to enjoy the roughly 8 to 12 and then live with another 10 to 15 from David Johnson? And will that be more productive between the two than we would get from a 20 carry David Johnson?
You know, that's where it comes in to play here, is that you have to find the best way for this team to produce. I think the production will stem from using Johnson as more of a 25 touch a game player. So 15 carries, you know, 15 to 18 carries, and, you know, those 7 to 10 catches a game. And then you're getting another, you know, 12 to 15 carries with Chase Edmonds, and maybe three or four of those, they're in the backfield together, where you can kind of you can kind of play them off one another. I think that's going to be the biggest thing for this team starting off is or going forward is that you have guys that do different things, and so you have to use those guys in their strengths and understand that David Johnson is not going to be a guy that breaks off a big run. But like you said, if you give him 20 carries, he's probably going to put up 80, 85, 95 yards.
Which would be, by the way, right in line with his 2016 production when he had his 1,200 yards rushing. He averaged 4.2 yards per carry. If you're getting 20 carries, 85 yards, boom.
Yep. And so that's the thing. So now you're saying, hey, let's give you 15 to 18, get you right around 65 to 75 yards. And then we'll give Chase, you know, like I said, that 12 to 15. And on that 12 to 15, he's going to be averaging closer to 7 yards per carry, you know, where he's going to maybe have a 1 or 2 yard game, but then he'll give you that 25 yard play off the side and things of that nature. So I think that's where it's going to be for this team. I think the ultimate goal is probably going to be where you want DJ at 25 touches and Chase it at 12 to 15 touches a game. And you know, some of those touches for David Johnson are going to be in the passing game where he still is. And I think we saw it this weekend, and I know that they didn't focus a ton on the passing game because of the weather and just how bad the Giants defense is defending the run, but they don't, I mean, Johnson is really the only guy that will consistently win in one-on-one situations, especially with Christian Kirk out, whereas a guy, you know, where because he's going to be covered by a safety who he's too big for, linebacker who he's still too quick and fast for, and he's such a great route runner. So I think that's where you're going to end up wanting to see, you know, those big plays from David Johnson, those 20 plus yard plays in when he's on the field. So I think that's where it's going to come down to for kind of the running back rotation, if you will.
And what's interesting is to see how this offense is beginning to develop into which Cliff Kingsbury, who has a very receiver-centric offense, suddenly has a very running back-centric offense and a very running run-centric offense between Chase Edmonds and David Johnson and Kyler Murray. What the stat is there? They are the only team in the league to have three players who are rushing who have at least 250 yards this season on the ground. And that is a testament to Kingsbury and the, you know, Mike McCoy preached being flexible, but we're actually seeing this flexibility from Kingsbury, who wants to have a passing attack, but is more than willing to run the ball if it works. He really just wants to win and put up points and find ways to be successful. And so I think he's enjoying the challenge of doing this, especially when, while he has talented receivers, you know, let's think about this. Look at what the Cardinals are doing offensively and who are the players that are getting them, who are the receivers playing the most? It's Damir Bird and Trent Sherfield. If anyone had told you that in the offseason, how confident would anyone have been hearing that and thinking that we were going to have a successful offense? That is not the recipe for a successful offense if you tell me that Trent Sherfield and Damir Bird will get the most snaps consistently on offense.
Right, and that was the thing, is like we talked about this passing game and how they lacked certain talent, and that's why they brought in a Crabtree, because they just knew that the young guys weren't quite ready yet. And when it all is, you know, said and done, they're going to end up being fine offensively. But something that we've talked about is that they've got a bunch of number two and three receivers, and they don't have a guy that demands coverages shift, that doesn't, you know, demands defenses focus on them, and that opens up the game for other teams.
They're specialty receivers. They're specialty receivers. And so they have a lot of different tooled guys, but no one just to say, hey, I'm the alpha. And so Cliff Kingsbury plays matchups.
Right. And so the other thing you see a lot of, and this was in the game on Sunday, is you had man up on Fitz. And then if you follow the free safety, Antoine Bethea, a lot of it was simply him over the top of whoever was covering Fitz. So all of a sudden you have this situation where you're asking, like you said, Trent Sherfield and Damir Byrd to win their one-on-one matchups. And no offense to those guys, but they're not dynamic players. They're just not. They're like, In a good offense, Trent Sherfield is your fifth receiver and Damir Byrd is your fourth receiver, your kind of deep threat guy. And in this offense, Sherfield had the most snaps offensively. Byrd had the second most snaps offensively. You can't have that, you know, and expect a great passing game. So to see Cliff adapt, to see Cliff kind of put the onus on the offensive line in the running game, and to see how well they played, I think that was a great game and a great way to kind of etch out another win, because now they've won in three different ways. They've thrown the ball all over the field, and, you know, in the past two games, and then this week you saw the offense kind of ground and pound, and with one running back and great defense. You know, against the Bengals, it was a three-headed rushing attack where they had over 250 yards rushing for the first time in what was it, like 20 years or something crazy like that,
something ridiculous.
So I mean, that's three games in three different ways that they've won, and I think that when you look at when you talk about being multiple, when you talk about taking what the defense gives you or game planning specific, you have to just applaud Cliff Kingsbury for what he's done thus far.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about the situation with David Johnson in the game on Sunday, some confusion and some anger about his usage and the report that came out. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Oh, boy. Now, David Johnson played three snaps. He had one carry for 2 yards. He practiced. He missed practice on Wednesday, was limited on Thursday and Friday. Cliff Kingsbury said that if it were Friday, he probably wouldn't have been able to play. DJ himself on Friday said it felt fine, but he's day-to-day. He didn't commit to playing. The report came out from both Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport late Saturday night, basically Sunday morning, and said that despite being questionable, despite the ankle concerns, he was expected to play. And he was on the field to start the game, but then left the game and never returned. So he was in for the first two plays, came in for another play later in the first drive, never played again. Oh my goodness, the amount of backlash the team received on social media, from fantasy football players to the fantasy guru of all, Matthew Berry, who went on a bit of a tirade on Monday. What's your take on the whole thing? This was crazy to me.
Yeah, it was interesting because, like you said, he played the first snap and he got the first carry, right? I mean, I think they ran the ball in the first play. And so to me, it seemed like the plan wasn't necessarily to not run David Johnson. The plan was to see what he could do, and he got the ball to start the game, and it was like, I can't do anything on this. And you have to look at the conditions. I mean, you had an obviously wet field with a team that was going to clearly be run heavy in their game planning, and you ended up with a situation where their lead back went out, tested it on the first play, and you could, you know, probably just said, no, this isn't going to work. Like, we can't do this today. And so he was done. And I think that's, I mean, I think that's the responsible way to handle that situation instead of pushing it. While we are 100% on the let's win as many games as possible bandwagon, we're also knowledgeable and understanding enough to say, hey, this is going to be a long season where you're really going to have to pick your spots where you're going to try and force the issue. I think it's going to be an interesting question this week that we'll get to later. And so you look at it and you go, hey, this is a game that we can probably win without David Johnson. One of maybe three or four games all season, right, that they can win without David Johnson. And so let's take our shot and see if we can do it, and it worked out.
Now, for the backlash out for the fantasy point of view, I will defend. Now, I will tell you listeners, I don't play fantasy football. I played one season only because when I was running the site, when I was actually running Revenge of the Birds, I had to set up a league, and I had to. And so I sort of played fantasy football. I get why people do it. It's too much for me. I watch football to watch football. I can't pay attention. It's just too much for me. That said, I can sympathize in a way to the frustration that players feel, because to me, there was an element of purposeful deceit on the Cardinals' side. But that's absolutely consistent with how the Cardinals have handled every piece of injury information that we've dealt with since the offseason. They don't want to give anything away. And so I completely understand why fantasy players went out and played David Johnson. I think, what is it? I think Matthew Berry said it was 97%. David Johnson was active on 97% of fantasy teams for week 7. Especially if you connect the dots that in week 6, he practiced less and played a lot. And so when he practiced, according to the injury report, more in week 7, and they didn't add a running back, so technically they only had David Johnson and Chase Edmonds available because DJ Foster ruled out with a hamstring injury. They did not sign a running back or bring a running back up from the practice squad, Justin Davis. So all signs pointed to David Johnson playing and Chase Edmonds. Maybe he wouldn't have gotten the 80 to 90% snaps that he would. And so all signs pointed towards that. And then the report comes out saying Johnson's expected to play. The Cardinals went out of their way to leak to the media that, yes, David Johnson's going to play. So that did feel like that there was some purposeful deceit, or perhaps some lying, because, you know, Cliff Kingsbury said after the game he was never going to be more than an emergency option. And I don't know how true that is, because obviously they wanted him out there to start. And maybe the option was he was never going to get more than 5 or 6 carries, maybe. And once they felt, okay, it wasn't quite right, and they were comfortable with Chase. That's the other factor to this, is the fact that they are supremely confident that Chase Edmonds can take his spot, and they were rewarded. And so if there's any doubt, they're going to lean on Chase moving forward. So I get the frustration. I get the frustration in the fact that, hey, fantasy players rely on the information that's out there, but the Cardinals didn't do them any favors. Like, what a reasonable report would have been from Rappaport or Schefter had the team been, you know, more forthcoming, would say that David Johnson is expected to play, but on a limited basis. That might have changed some things. That said, ultimately, it doesn't matter. Fantasy football isn't important. It's fun. And, hey, that's just one of those things you're going to have to deal with. But to me, there was a little bit of purposeful deceit, and I can understand why after the Cardinals Twitter account kind of poked fun. It's like, should have started Chase Edmonds, you know, to the fantasy football, enjoy the win. So yeah, I can get why it was, but come on, don't take it that seriously. What you're playing is fake football, not real football, and the Cardinals were trying to do right by their team, and they clearly don't give a rip about fantasy football players.
Right, and that's the whole thing. It's like, no offense to the fantasy football world, but Cliff Kingsbury's in the business of winning football games, and that's what he's trying to do, and so he's going to take whatever advantage he may get, and if that's, you know, being misleading, then that's what he's doing. And so,
but that's been consistent with him. I disagree personally. I don't see, I honestly, for the purpose of our job within the analyst world, the media world, I do not see how not telling reporters what type of injury a player has, what sort of prognosis they have, any sort of potential timeline, I don't see how that hurts the team at all when it actually helps fans temper expectations and it helps media members do their job of informing fans and things like that. I disagree with how they go about it, but I get why they do it.
Right, and I mean, you and I have talked about how annoying it is.
Like, how hard would it have been to say, Christian's got a high ankle sprain, we figure he's probably out 3 to 4 weeks, but we're not ruling him out at all. It could be before then.
Right, and so, like, I mean, we've dealt with it all season, so maybe it's just because we are aware of what has been happening in with Arizona, the injury situation under Cliff Kingsbury and how he's kind of been doing the whole thing. And we've dealt with the, you know, misinformation and kind of trying to figure out a way to decipher through the noise. And so, you know, the reality is, and it's always been the reality with the Cardinals, they're only going to get noticed nationally if they're A, good, or B, if they do something that irritates the national media and or members of the national media. And in this case, it was option B. I mean, it's not that they're a bad team, but they're not good enough for people like Matthew Berry, who, you know, is obviously great as a fantasy expert or whatever he calls himself, but doesn't really pay attention to the Cardinals on a day-to-day basis. So he's going to obviously be frustrated by the outcome of the situation.
That leads us to the roster move that they made today that, well, technically hasn't been announced, will likely be announced Wednesday when you hear this show. And that's the addition of Alfred Morris, which is an interesting move because they had Alfred Morris in for a visit a month ago. And they reportedly were bringing in Jay Ajayi, Benny Cunningham, and Spencer Ware Monday and Tuesday for workouts. And then after working them out and having all three of those guys in for a visit, they go back to the guy that they worked out a month ago in Alfred Morris. Now, that leads us to what there's obviously enough. Like, my thoughts initially when they were bringing those guys in is like, how much is it about David Johnson? How much is it about DJ Foster? As evidenced by the fact that Alfred Morris has played a total of 13 special teams snaps his entire career. This move had nothing to do about DJ Foster's availability. This is all about do they have another guy behind Chase Edmonds if David Johnson's unable to play, so that they don't put themselves in the same situation as they did a week ago. I think last week they kind of were playing with fire a little bit and were lucky to come out of it okay. I don't think they want to do that again.
Well, and I was going to, you know, talk about this as we get to the as we get to kind of the conversation about the Saints game. But I go back and forth on this and whether or not this is me just being paranoid or me just reading too much into a situation or what, but I think, and again, I'm not trying to say I have any inside information, but I think and I wonder if the team is looking at this game against the Saints and going, yeah, this is the Saints in New Orleans. Let's not push David Johnson. Let's not push Christian Kirk. Let's be ready for Thursday Night Football 4 days later against what will probably be a 7-0 San Francisco 49ers team at home where we can make a statement. And I'm not saying the team is punting on a game or anything of that nature, but it does kind of reek of, hey, let's make sure that David Johnson's not 80 or 85% or Christian Kirk's not 80 or 85%. Let's make sure these guys are 95, 100% for Thursday night game. And let's have, like you said, a guy in Alfred Morris who can come in and he's not going to be as dynamic as David Johnson in the passing game, but can probably get you the same type of production in that kind of ground and pound, grinded out in between the tackles kind of runs. I think that is kind of where this whole Alfred Morris thing comes in, is that they're just looking for a guy for a game, or maybe it's two games. Maybe they say, hey, we've got two games against these are the number two and one seed in the NFC. They're two of the best defenses in the entire NFL, both behind the Patriots, but, you know, probably the top two defenses in the NFC. Let's either be ready to go for the Bucs game on the 10th of November when we have that big 10-day break or 11-day break, or let's have a healthier team going into the 49ers Thursday night game. Again, I'm not saying that they're punting on anything, but that's the kind of move you make when you're saying, hey, we're not going to push David Johnson. We're not going to push a guy that has long-term implications to our success, especially with games against Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland coming up that are three, entirely winnable games. And even against the Rams, maybe, like all of a sudden now you're saying, hey, there's three or four games on the schedule where we feel like we can pull out wins. It may not be in New Orleans. Hell, it may not even be at home against San Francisco on a short week. But we feel really confident that if we give David Johnson, virtually 3 weeks off, he's going to be 100% healthy for the stretch run down the stretch where maybe three or four games are winnable. And you get to that, seven win plateau that you and I kind of talked about at the beginning of the season.
Coming up next on the Res Ups here at Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's time to talk about the play of Kyler Murray on Sunday. And let's look at kind of the big picture, what we've seen from this year. That's coming up next on Res Ups here. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Kyler Murray did not have a dynamic performance against the New York Giants. It was not the 340 yards and three touchdowns that he had against the Falcons. It wasn't the 93 rushing yards and the touchdown against the Bengals. It was a game manager. However, he finished with, 104 passing yards on 14 completions out of 21. So if you're looking statistically, it was a terrible passing game in terms of production, averaging about, 4 yards four and a half yards per passing attempt, 28 yards on 10 rushing attempts. So not a whole lot of dynamic play there. However, Cliff Kingsbury once again praised him for the way he took care of the football. And he has been very anti-rookie because he has been winning games. And I heard this on the radio. I heard this on the radio, so this is not how I didn't come up with this. But he's helped the Card in the three wins. He's helped the Cardinals win three different ways. He's helped the Cardinals win with his arm. That was against Atlanta. With his legs against Cincinnati. And now with his brain against the Giants, because he managed the game. He didn't make mistakes. He made the right play calls at checks at the line of scrimmage, and he didn't turn the ball over. How impressive in a 104-yard passing performance did you see Kyler as playing like? As how impressive was that 104-yard performance?
I think it was very impressive in the sense that you said he continues to find ways to be take care of the ball, to put his team in a position to win games. And in the end, when you look at just the NFL in general, whether people like it or not, quarterbacks at the end of the day are judged by their counting stats and their wins. You have to be able to put your team in a position to win football games just as much as you have to be able to put up big numbers. And so there are weeks when guys either A, don't have it, or the game plan calls for other ways to kind of go at the game. And so, you know, I kind of look at the Green Bay Packers. They're right now the third seed in the NFC. They obviously have a guy that's a Hall of Famer in Aaron Rodgers. He's going to be one of the greatest that ever plays. This season, they had a win against Chicago in the first game, where he threw for 203 yards and a touchdown. They have a win against Dallas where he threw for 238 yards and no touchdowns. So you've got a guy that is one of the, you know, best quarterbacks in the history of the game who has put up, you know, basically non Hall of Fame-esque numbers in two wins. You go back to Patrick Mahomes in the game against Detroit. He threw for 315 yards. He didn't throw for any touchdowns or any interceptions. I mean, and they won the game. So sometimes it's not about, you know, how many yards you throw for or things of that nature. It comes down to, do you give your team a chance to win? And one of the things that I don't think it's talked about quite enough is just how few mistakes we've seen Kyler Murray make. He's not careless with the football. He's a guy that sets his, you know, he's made mistakes in not understanding the athleticism of the NFL. We've seen that a couple times, especially when he's scrambling or running the ball and he maybe takes a bad sack or steps out of bounds when he should stay in bounds. But he's not testing fate too much as a quarterback. He's not trying to force plays to happen. And I think it's especially important when you know that you may lack the talent of the other team to make up for those errors. So when you don't have dynamic playmakers on the outside, you can't afford to put yourself in a hole because you don't have dynamic playmakers to make up for those games or for those mistakes. And so when you look at what Murray did on Sunday, was it impressive statistically? No. Did he make some mental errors again? Absolutely. I think the sack again, he gets himself out of trouble and then puts himself back in trouble. And I just think that comes with reps of understanding how athletic the defense is. And then I think the other thing is you look at when he runs the ball, he has to remember the situations. He has to remember where they are on the field and what the accomplishment of him is trying to be. And I think all of that kind of plays into the rookie aspect. But I think more than anything, you saw a guy that has been really careful with the ball the last three games, and it's coincided with three big wins for the Cardinals, the first three-game winning streak they've had since the Bruce Arians era in 2015.
Correct. And he's thrown a total of four interceptions this year. He hasn't turned a ball over yet in the last three games. He hasn't lost a fumble yet this year. And you really sort of take that for granted when you look at, you know, he's averaging less than two interceptions. He's less averaging about less than one interception per game. And you look at last season, Josh Rosen, who, you know, really kind of took care of the football as well for the most part, and he had 14 interceptions in 13 games. And so you look at that, and then you look at, you know, that Monday night game when you see a guy like Sam Darnold throw four interceptions in one game. Now, we know Sam Darnold was he's been turnover prone. The knock on him is that he will make the wow throw, but he will Brett Favre you and turn the ball over as well. And rookie quarterbacks in particular are particularly prone to turning the ball over. We can point to the fact Peyton Manning, his very first season, led the NFL in interceptions. We've seen some great young quarterbacks turn the ball over a lot, and Kyler Murray isn't doing that. So he's being super smart with the football. He doesn't have a track record of turning the football over. If you look at his 1 year at Oklahoma, he was incredibly good at taking care of the football, and he understands that. So even if that doesn't mean putting up gaudy numbers, he's at least, even if he's not the reason they are winning, he's also not the reason that they are losing or putting themselves in a hole, which is super important for a young quarterback, because a lot of young quarterbacks lose games for teams early on. And so he's taking himself out of the equation as being the reason why they lose.
Yeah, and you look at it, you know, you kind of just gloss over these numbers, and Kyle Allen started four games. He barely throws the football, 122 pass attempts, and he has no interceptions. That's part of the reason the Panthers are winning football games, is that he just doesn't turn the ball over. You look at the guys at the top, you know, Patrick Mahomes, 5-2, Russell Wilson, 5-2, Aaron Rodgers, 6-1, Gardner Minshew, you know, has been really, really good with the football. He's 3-3 as a starter. They're 3-4 overall. Teddy Bridgewater is 5-0 in his start. He's only thrown two interceptions. Mitch Trubisky, he's 3-2 as a starter. I know he hasn't played well, but hasn't thrown a ton of interceptions. And they, you know, like I said, he's 3-2 as a starter. You look at the guys that have not, you know, that are under 2% interception rate, you know, and you know Deshaun Watson, Derek Carr, Carson Wentz, Kirk Cousins. These are all guys that win football games. You look at the guys that are over 3%. I mean, so the over 3% guys, where you have Jimmy Garoppolo, who's the only, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo and Josh Allen are both over 3% interception rates. That's not great, but their teams are winning in spite of that. The rest of the list goes Daniel Jones, you know, fellow rookie quarterback, he's at 4%. Jameis Winston, They're 2-4. They're struggling mightily. He's at 4.5%. Josh Rosen, you know, we know the Miami struggles. He's at 4.6%. Sam Darnold is at 4.8%. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Rosen's counterpart in Miami, is at 4.8%. I mean, they've thrown 10 interceptions combined. And then Baker Mayfield has thrown 11. That's 5.6%. So you kind of look at it, and it's interesting because, you know, anybody that's under 2% basically is – you know, 500 or right around 500. And then when you look at the 4% below, those are the teams that lose football games. Those are teams that are struggling to win. And so that's one of the things you talked about. That's a huge, huge thing for Kyler, is not to turn the ball over. It's not to be overly cautious with the football.
He's not Alex Smith.
Right. You look at Kyler, he sits at 12th in counting stats in terms of yards. He hasn't thrown a ton of touchdowns. He's at 21. That's, you know, it's not great. He's really low down on the touchdown percentage list. But if you're going to be low down on that touchdown percentage list, you better be low down on the interception percentage list. And so when you kind of look at it, you know, he's middle of the pack in terms of quarterback rating. He's, you know, upper echelon of QBR, depending on what statistics you want to use. So overall, he's playing at a high level for a rookie that is, you know, again, I'll say it, that doesn't have a ton of talent around him on the offensive side of the ball. And I think that's super important for not just this year, but going forward, that you're going to see a guy that gives you the chance to grow and keeps you in football games, because he's not going to make major mistakes and give the opposition short fields.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the defense. They went from being a bad defense to suddenly a really good defense in the matter of 1 week. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Cardinals defensively had been a mess for most of the year, and then against the Giants, they suddenly look like juggernauts. They force 3 turnovers. They sack Daniel Jones 8 times. They limit them to under 300 yards of offense after they were giving up over 400, you know, after they were giving up some of the most passing yards and yards overall. They limited Saquon Barkley. And the one main difference is the return of Patrick Peterson. What are we to make of this defensive performance? Because guess what? The way they won that game was a very Steve Wilks way to win a game. That's what he wanted. He wanted to be dominant defensively, wanted to run the ball, and that's what the Cardinals did. But they did it with Cliff Kingsbury. So, I mean, what did you think of that defense? Because in some ways, it didn't feel like they were being good defensively, but then you look at the overall numbers and how few yards they allowed and the fact they only gave up 14 points defensively and how they sacked Daniel Jones 8 times. And it was just – they hit him a number of times. It was just incredible to see that defensive turnaround. Was that all Patrick Peterson?
I think it was – Peterson's presence more than it was his play. I mean, I don't think he played bad by any means, so I don't want people to take it that way, but I think he's still getting kind of his feet wet. But I think what it does is it gives you, as a coaching staff, it gives you confidence to kind of deploy deploy your defense in a different way that allows you to be aggressive in a different way and allows you to kind of play I don't want to say reckless abandon, because it's not reckless, but, you know, play in a way that allows you to be overly aggressive and really push the boundaries of how this team is going to look. And so I think we saw that this week. They were able to blitz a little more. They were able to really kind of push the tempo in the pass rush more. They blitzed us, you know, a little bit more. And I think that made a big difference in kind of the overall swagger of the defense and the play that we saw on the field, because it gives them a little more confidence. Now all of a sudden they're saying, hey, we can, you know, we got a guy that's going to make a play. Hey, it gives Vance Joseph a little more confidence to be a little more aggressive and do some different things. And, you know, that was something that we haven't seen consistently. And this week we were able to see it, and you saw a lot of guys be successful in a lot of things. I mean, even the touchdown drive, I thought, and you probably agree with me here, I thought that Buda Baker just misplayed the ball. He could have made a play on the ball, and he just misread it. And again, you know, this is where my – what's the word I'm looking for? My frustration with Vance Joseph lies more than anything, is that you've got a guy – in Buda, who's not necessarily that kind of center fielder, playing a single high position, asking him to make plays on the ball. And that's not, you know, he's not, that's not really his strength, where you got a guy in Deontay Thompson who did that quite a bit, at Alabama. So it's not that they were, you know, it's not all Patrick Peterson, but I do think a lot of it is Patrick Peterson in the fact that they feel confident to push the envelope more.
And Chandler Jones was frankly incredible. I will be the first to say he's had good numbers this year, and he had good numbers last year, but it felt like he wasn't completely dominant since 2017. He was dominant again. He's been pretty consistent about getting about a sack a game, but he was a monster against the Giants. He was playing at another level. Now, 8 sacks? I mean, that's four from Chandler. Terrell Suggs got in on the party. Corey Peters had another one, and even Brooks Reed picked up the sack. And so I was super impressed. And in addition to the addition of Patrick Peterson, I noticed something looking at the snap counts, and I don't know if it just took time, but it would appear that Vance Joseph has found specific roles for specific players. Now, they played almost exclusively nickel against the Giants. Out of the 71 defensive snaps, they were in nickel for 64 of them. Tremaine Brock now only comes in and plays a slot. He does not play multiple positions. Jalen Thompson and Deontay Thompson, previously they were almost splitting evenly, half and half, the defensive snaps. They have set roles now. Jalen plays in base, and Deontay played in nickel. That, of course, that meant on Sunday, Deontay played a whole bunch more than Jalen, even though Jalen technically was the starter. And they went back to at that linebacker, they had Joe Walker in at inside backer for base defenses, and then Hassan Reddick in there for nickel. And it'll be interesting to see if this continues to happen, but it almost felt like, well, one, you get Patrick Peterson back, and two, they limited the roles of some players. So Hassan has a less wide role. Joe Walker has a specific role. Deontay and Jalen both have specific roles. Tremaine Brock now has one role. And maybe that is one of the contributing factors.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see the growth kind of continue as they get more comfortable with the players. You're going to see growth with Deontay and Jalen Thompson, because I mean they were virtually just getting what, 5 snaps here and there until DJ Swearinger was released. I mean, literally we saw Swearinger play, I think it was all 100% of the snaps, even in his last game as a Cardinal. So sometimes there's addition by subtraction. Sometimes it's just about getting the right mix of guys into the situation. I think we are beginning to kind of find the groove, so to speak, for a lot of these a lot of these players. And so this will be a team that is going to probably improve, maybe not this week, but you're going to see continued growth with the return of Patrick Peterson, and then hopefully the return of Robert Alford, who we have heard absolutely zero about where he's at in a return process.
And Cliff even said with Alford that there's always the possibility that he won't return this year. I can tell you the one I actually saw him in the locker room after the game against the Falcons, and I saw him. He had a visible limp. He was in regular clothes, but when he was walking, there was a definite hitch in his step. So it looks like that leg still clearly bothers him. So I would dare say he's probably not particularly close to anything. Talking about injuries, the one to watch is to see what they do with Max Garcia, because they've only got him out another week to decide whether they're going to activate him or not, and that'll affect the numbers on the offensive line. But that's neither here nor there. Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I've got some numbers and some stats that I want to talk about the significance of their record so far and their overall offensive play, and talking about turnovers and that. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And, you know, the Cardinals are now 3-3-1. And this is a stat that I wanted to share because I was interested in seeing the success. You know, we're at nearly half a season. What the success of other coaches in their first year with the Cardinals have had through seven games. Cliff Kingsbury is 3-3-1. You will be surprised to know that since 1966, no Cardinals coach has been over 500 since 1966 in their first seven games. In fact, Cliff Kingsbury has the very best record among all those coaches. There were five coaches who were 3-4, and history is very favorable if this being the case. So Kingsbury has 3 wins, 3 losses, and a tie. Let's look at the other five guys who had 3 wins in their first seven games. We go to Jim Halifan. Way back in 1971. Okay, he was only there a couple of years. Don Coryell, he led them to a 3-4 record in their first seven games. Vince Tobin in 1997 led them to a 3-4 record through their first seven games. Ken Wisenhunt was 3-4 in his first seven games. Bruce Arians was 3-4 in his first seven games. And do you know what? Excluding Halifan, going from Don Coryell to Vince Tobin to Ken Wisenhunt and Bruce Arians, Seth, do you know what all four of those coaches have in common?
They were good their second season.
They were. In fact, all four of those, so of the last five coaches, so five coaches have had 3 wins in their first seven games. Four of those took the Cardinals to the playoffs in either year two or year three with them. Bruce Arians got them to the playoffs in year two. Ken Wisenhunt got them to the Super Bowl in year two. Vince Tobin got them in year two. I believe it was year three when Coryell got them there, but they went to consecutive playoffs. So, and three of those four coaches took the Cardinals to consecutive years in the playoffs, because Wisenhunt did it, Arians did it, and Coryell did it, and Tobin just took them the one time. So history looks fondly on what we've seen from Cliff Kingsbury so far, so keep an eye on that. He has the best record through seven games of any of those coaches beginning in their first season. And if you look at that 3-win mark, that bodes well, because history says that either next year or in 2021, the Cardinals will be a playoff team.
Yeah, and And that's the big thing, is that you continue to see kind of the evolution and growth of Cliff and Kyler as the duo. And it's obviously early, and it's obviously also a pipe dream, so to speak. But it would be really nice to see a team that is a team that has found their, you know, Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers, a team that's found their, you know, Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger, a team that's found their
Sean Belichick and Brady.
Yeah, no. see, and that's the thing, is like everybody wants to find Belichick and Brady, and yeah, an unprecedented 20-year run would be phenomenal with 6 Super Bowl wins, but what about a 10-12-year run where you maybe win a Super Bowl, but you're competing for them every year or two? You don't want to be, and I'm not trying to take a shot, but you don't want to be Bruce Arians Cardinals. You don't want to be the Dan Quinn Atlanta Falcons, right? You want to be the Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson Seattle Seahawks. And so what you're seeing early is really good, because you're seeing that this is not just, oh, a team that's going to throw the ball everywhere, blah, 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 all that, you know, all that stuff. You're seeing a team that is going to grow, that they're going to continue to get better, that they're multiple, and that they're winning in different ways. And so Cliff's first 7 games, there have been a ton of mistakes, but there's also been a ton of learning and growth that we've seen, to the point where you're like, this may work over the long haul. And that's what's the most important thing in this whole situation, is that you want to see this be a duo that kind of pushes forward. Again, there's not many Brady, or there's never Brady and Belichick. I mean, that's just never happened in the history of the game. But if you can be a team that has a 9-10-11-year run where you're relevant in 8 of those seasons, and then in 6 of those seasons you're in the NFC Championship or Super Bowl, and hell, maybe even you win one, like that's like a dream come true. So the fact that they're starting better than, you know, any iteration of Cardinals coaches and quarterbacks ever is a big deal, and something that, you know, you can't really turn your nose up to, even if people want to say, yeah, but look who they've played.
Well, right, and that's the part that tells me, so with these 3 straight wins, which they haven't done since 2015, they have shown me one thing, and that's, with 3 straight wins, they're not a bad team. They're a flawed team. Then we can't say they're a good team yet, but bad teams in the NFL don't win 3 straight games. So no, we know that. So we know for sure this Cardinals team is not a bad team.
Right. And that's the biggest thing, is that they're not a bad team. In fact, they're a highly entertaining team with talent that can continue to grow. And I think more than anything, that's the biggest thing you want to see, is that this is a team that continues to grow, continues to look like they're going in the right direction, and then you kind of go from there.
They're number 4 in the league in scoring drives. They have the fewest turnovers in the entire NFL. 4 turnovers through 7 games. They are the only team not to lose a fumble yet this year. So this is a team that is, clearly, there's still flaws on this team. But and if you look at the big picture, if you look at the division, because the NFC West right now is the only team that doesn't have any team with a losing record. The Cardinals are 3-3-1, but if you look at that point differential, they're way behind the rest of the division. They're a negative 31. Seattle is a plus 5. San Francisco's a plus a whole bunch, and the Rams as well are a plus a whole bunch. So the Cardinals are winning, have won games, but they're not, I mean,
that negative point differential doesn't bode well. So it's not like you can expect them to go on a run. But what we can expect is competitiveness. And at least, and I think this is what we wanted to see from 2018 to 2019. At minimum, we wanted to see a team go from terrible to not bad, and then to make strides offensively, and that they have done. They've scored over 25 points in three straight games after a little bit of struggle early on. They have the fourth most scoring drives in the NFL this year. They have rushed for more yards through seven games than they have in nearly 20 years. So the offensive production is there. And so I through seven games, we can almost just deem this season a success. Now, we obviously still need to play the last nine games of the year, but just based on what we've seen through seven games, the offense is markedly improved, and this team isn't terrible. This season is already a success.
Right, and so they're growing, they're getting better, and you're finding, you're kind of finding a team that's finding its identity and finding its way, and I think that's the biggest thing that we're going to see, is that they're going to be competitive and even good at times. And so, we'll see how that turns out in the end. But so far, I think you have to be excited about where they're at.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the last best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk about one last thing. We're going to look ahead to Week 8, a very, very difficult matchup the Cardinals have this weekend against the New Orleans Saints on the road. The 6-1 Saints, undefeated at home, and believe it or not, 5-0 under Teddy Bridgewater. That's coming up next on Rise Up Seaward. We're back on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and the Cardinals have a very challenging matchup this weekend. The three straight wins is a bit of a statement in itself. This game would send shockwaves throughout the entire league if the Cardinals managed to pull this off. What sort of challenges do they face against this Saints team?
I think they face some big challenges, because this is clearly one of the best, if not the best, teams in the NFC. They don't make mistakes offensively, and then defensively, they may be, the best defensive team in the NFC. You have a really kind of difficult matchup here, where I don't know where the strength of the Cardinals wins out. The Saints defense is strong against the pass. They're strong against the run. They are able to rush the passer with consistency. And so when you look at it, I think the biggest thing is going to be kind of controlling the tempo, forcing the issue, and then finding a way to create another turnover. They have to win the turnover battle, and they may not turn the ball over, but if they don't force any turnovers, I don't think that they're going to be able to create enough against a really good Saints defense to force the issue. So what ends up happening is you just end up playing the game that we've seen against the Panthers and the Seahawks, where you try to trade touchdowns, and the Cardinals just, right now they're not built for that offensively. They're not good enough. They don't have enough talent to keep up with that. So you have to find a way to kind of control the game. Obviously, you have to score a bunch, but then you're going to have to find a way to create a turnover against a team that just doesn't turn the ball over. Teddy Bridgewater in five games has only thrown two interceptions. So you're going to have to create havoc and kind of force the issue to have a chance in this game.
Some matchup problems for the Cardinals. Now, they still have not been super effective against the run, and you're going to face Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray. The two of them combine for more than 600 yards this season, and they're averaging near, you know, about 4.4 yards per carry. Thank goodness Patrick Peterson is back, because Michael Thomas, through seven games, he has 62 catches for 763 yards. This is absolutely absurd. The next, Alvin Kamara, Ted Ginn, the production drops off significantly. So obviously Teddy Bridgewater has been looking Thomas's way early and often. And so Patrick Peterson will definitely be able to help with that. And maybe this is where having Patrick back will begin to show some chinks in the armor to Bridgewater, simply because when you look at that production, 62 catches, and then their next highest productive pass catchers, Alvin Kamara with 33. But then after that, it drops to 18 with Ted Ginn, 15 to Jared Cook. And so if you can take away or limit Michael Thomas, I don't know if Patrick's going to be able to completely stop Michael Thomas, but at least limit some of that production, maybe the Cardinals have a chance. Because Byron Murphy, I think he can hang with Ted Ginn, because as a receiver, we know what he is. Now, Jared Cook, he's exactly the sort of tight end that's going to go off on the Cardinals. But offensively, you like kind of in a couple of ways, because you got Patrick back, things don't look as dire. Now, defensively, they do have themselves some talent. Cameron Jordan with 7 sacks on the season. You've got Marshawn Lattimore, who is an incredibly talented cornerback. Marcus Williams. You've got Von Bell. You've got in this defense. I mean, the Saints team has long been known for their offense. Their defense is very, very tough now.
Well, and they finally have a defense that can match up with their offense, and that's the scary thing now, is that they have a defense that can carry them. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater's playing really well, so I don't want anybody to think that, you know, it's going to be a cakewalk. But they are so good defensively that they can start slow on offense and then overcome that, because their defense puts them in a position to win football games. And here's the thing, and this is why I believe that it's going to be a really tough game for the Cardinals to win, is that this is a team that has won in a number of different ways against a number of different opponents. They obviously, in the first game with Drew Brees, they were they won a shootout against the Houston Texans, 30-28. They got blown out by the Rams in L.A., but I think we all know kind of the story of that game. Brees goes down. Bridgewater has to come in. First action in a long time. Kind of New Orleans struggles. The Rams take advantage. From there, you have what I would call at the time surprising and dominant effort against the Seattle Seahawks, where Seattle really only made it a game late. You have a win over the Dallas Cowboys, who were undefeated at that point at 3-0, where they just completely shut down the Cowboys offense. They won 12-10. Then you have a game in Tampa Bay where, again, they put up just gaudy offensive stats and really shut down a Tampa Bay team that had been playing well to that point. Then they go into Jacksonville and beat down a Jacksonville team that's one of the most physical, you know, teams in the NFL, 13-6 in another kind of defensive game. And then they just absolutely obliterate a Chicago Bears team at home in Chicago, where you're just not expecting it. So they've won in a variety of ways. They've won close games. They've won in blowouts. They've won with offense. They've won with defense. And that's the kind of dangerous team that the Cardinals are going to have to deal with. And they're going into their bye the next week. So what they're looking to do is kind of make a statement, finish off kind of where they're at, and then they know at worst case they may have their franchise back in Drew Brees. And I think that is kind of where this game is going to be interesting, is that you may be able to catch them in kind of this trap, but at the same time, they've been so laser focused all season. It feels really daunting to expect this Cardinals team, despite the fact that they've won two road games this year, to go on the road into New Orleans and find a way to beat what is looking like the best team in the NFC, if not one of the top three.
And the fact that there is the possibility Drew Brees comes back even adds to that. Now, this game feels to me the same way the Baltimore Ravens game felt. And in terms of what you want to see, obviously a win is what you want. But in a scenario like this, this is where the moral victory is applicable for a team like this Cardinals. To me, it's important that they continue to build on what they've been doing and simply not get blown out. And I think with the return of Patrick Peterson, I think that shores up the defense, and I think offensively they are doing enough to where that they will keep this game relatively competitive. And so a win would be fantastic. It would be a shocker statement, and I think it would send waves throughout the league about Cliff Kingsbury as a coach and really sort of validate him as someone legitimate in the league and not just some joke that, you know, because he knows Sean McVay, he got a job, that he's been with him before, he's hung out with him. And so that's the best, for me, is probably the best case scenario is a competitive loss. And I see this game turning out. I don't think they're going to be able to produce what they've been able the last 3 weeks offensively. And I think ultimately the Saints' firepower wins out. I see this as a 28-20 loss. But, like, if you're, you know, Cardinals have right now, they're 5-2 against the spread. This would make them 6-2 against the spread if the line continues to what it's been.
Yeah, and, you know, I think 8.5 makes sense. You know, the Cardinals have played well on the road, which is, I think, is the most surprising thing, is that they've been in every road game or won every road game thus far. So that's been interesting. I think this is a game where you see, you know, like you said, the Saints are just, they have more manpower. They have a better overall team. So you see them end up winning a game like, you know, maybe like a 32-24, 32-23 game where the Cardinals make it closer than it is late in the game, and maybe even, you know, lose by a touchdown with a chance to kind of tie it at the end, but kind of a la what the Giants did this last weekend.
And with that, Seth, there's anything else worth bringing up that you see with the Saints coming up this weekend?
No, I think it's going to be really interesting to see if David Johnson and Christian Kirk play, or if it's, you know, like I said, if this is a game where they're going, it's more important to be healthy for San Francisco or even Tampa than it is to kind of try and win games that seem out of their grasp right now in where they're at in this rebuild.
And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this edition of the show. Thanks again for listening. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back in a week. We will react to that, and it will be a short week, obviously, as the Cardinals will be playing on Thursday night, on Halloween night next week. So it'll be, we'll see what happens with the next show next week. So listen to us and again in a week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, go Cardinals. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, Be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Rise up! Rise up!